All right. Hello and welcome to Chooseify. Today on the show, we have a longtime Chooseify community member, Tom, who is a cybersecurity expert, a former pro poker player, and a former federal law enforcement officer who is currently in the private sector doing investigations into the world of cryptocurrency. So he has an amazing background for a topic that I've wanted to do for a very long time, which is securing your online life and ultimately securing your financial life, right? We live our entire lives at this point, our entire financial lives online, and we need to make some common sense positive changes to secure those lives. And that's the beautiful thing about having experts in our community, having this be the ultimate crowdsourced personal finance show, is that we have someone like Tom, who, as I said, is a former federal law enforcement officer who is truly an expert in this. So really excited to dive into this. Welcome to Chooseify.
You're listening to Chooseify Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, Tom, welcome to Choose FI.
Thanks, Brad. Glad to be here. Like you said, I've been a long time listener, but I would be remiss if I didn't start this with, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, man, I am doing quite well. Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, I miss that. That's one of the things you miss from, obviously, Jonathan has been an amazing co-host for so long. And yeah, I can't exactly say that to myself. So yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you guys had a great chemistry, and the first time I listened to an episode without him, that was just the one funny quirk at the beginning that I thought was just funny that was missing.
Yeah, well, thank you for bringing it back. I appreciate it. And thank you for being such an amazing community member. You're always active in the Facebook groups. You've become a friend of mine. We constantly text and jump on the phone for random different things, from everything from security to books we're talking about to crypto and things like that. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and I knew that you would be the perfect person to talk about this really, really essential topic that, like I said at the outset, that I've always wanted to do an episode on, because it really is critically important. So let's set the stage here. How, if you were to describe to somebody, okay, hey, you live your entire financial life, your entire life online, where do you even start in terms of, okay, most people have passwords that are ridiculous, like password 1234. I know that's the old comical joke, but most people aren't that much better than that, right? Reusing passwords, going on public Wi-Fi, doing all sorts of things that probably are suboptimal. Like, again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but where would we even start this conversation?
So yeah, you bring up a lot of good points. And you know, I think the key to any of this, like you always say, get 1% better on this podcast. And what I don't want is people to say, oh, cybersecurity, boring, you know, and then not listen and not take action. Because that's honestly, over the years, I can count on one hand how many episodes I've missed of this podcast. And the ones that actually were the best were the ones I took action on. So that's what I hope people take away from this. So the simple things of like what I would start talking about is, like, let's talk about passwords at the beginning, because everyone, you know, has passwords. We have so many passwords that we often end up making them the same and not really getting a good grasp on that. And the funny thing is that, you know, we now have all these requirements of like uppercase, lowercase, number, special character. The funny thing is we've made passwords really difficult for us to remember and really easy for computers to crack, because they don't particularly care too much about the fact that you threw in an at instead of an a. That's something that maybe we have difficulty remembering, but not so much the computer. So the number one thing I would tell people is, you know, get away from the password concept and go into the passphrase concept, because when you deal with password cracking, with hackers, with all the things that I've dealt with in my career, what they're often doing is using tools that brute force it or use social engineering and other tactics to understand and gain your passwords. But the longer the phrase, you know, if you can actually remember like, oh, my favorite summer was 1982, you know, or something that is an actual phrase that you can remember, the longer it is, the longer it takes for a hacker to brute force that password and crack it, as opposed to a short, very human complicated password, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly does. So, okay, I guess a couple questions with passphrases. The first one would be, how many characters? Like, is there a line of delineation of, okay, under 10 characters, even passwords or passphrase, however we want it. Obviously, a phrase isn't going to be under 10 characters, but a password, is there that line of delineation where, like, clearly it needs to be over X number of characters? Is that like an artificial construct, or is there some rule of thumb that you could come up with?
I mean, if I wish I could give you just an easy answer. The easy answer would be, if you're above 15, if you're above 20, 25, like the longer the better, right? Because what you're essentially telling the computer is, how many iterations do I have to run through before I crack this whole thing, right? But I don't want to get too focused on like cracking of passwords, because that's not necessarily always the way that your passwords are stolen. But it's just something to keep in mind. And it's often out of our control, right? We will have a situation where the website or whatever the software is tells us exactly how to create that password. So it requires us to have that certain complexity of a human side. But if you can adhere to that complexity while also making it a long password, then it's a win-win.
Yeah, that makes sense. And right, yeah, we don't want to get bogged down in the details. I could ask you a million questions about specific passwords and things. But I guess just going back to the passphrases, because I think that's probably a concept that's going to be a little foreign to a lot of people. So, I mean, we have logins at hundreds of sites at this point. I'm strongly assuming you would have a different passphrase at each. I guess the larger question is it even possible to remember 50 different passwords, 100, 200 different passwords, passphrases? Like, is that even plausible, or is that not the game we're going for here?
So I don't think it's possible to do all of that, which is why I think password managers are the way to go. I personally use a password manager. There are a lot of good options out there. I don't want to like pick one for fear of like then something happens and that one gets hacked and everyone's like, Tom, you told me right. that we should use that. But you know, there are a lot of good ones out there, and I use one to make that whole part simpler, because what we do here in Choose FI is try to simplify things. We try to automate things. I finally got my wife on using, because I have the family membership for this password manager. And she's like, wow, why didn't you tell me about this sooner? And I was like, I just didn't think you cared as much, you know? And she's like, no, but it makes her life easier, because she doesn't have to remember all those passwords, and it can auto-generate these passwords or passphrases that are complex, and you don't even have to worry about it. So that's always my recommendation. But I will say, and a lot of people will rightfully have the concern that, okay, if I have a password manager, well, what if someone gets into my password manager? Now they have everything, right? Now, yes, you are focusing it on one account, if you will. With that said, again, I don't want to get bogged into the details and tell people to do 15 different things, but I'll just tell you what I do. I have what's called a YubiKey. Many people are probably not familiar with a YubiKey, but it...
Tom, can you spell YubiKey?
Yes, it's Y-U-B, as in boy, I-K-E-Y, key at the end.
Okay.
So that's a physical device, almost like a flash drive or a thumb drive, that you can get in your possession and secure either your Gmail account, your password manager, or whatever it is. You can secure your account with this thing called a YubiKey, and no one can log into that account without physically possessing that device. To me, in my career in law enforcement, I dealt a lot with hackers around the world. And oftentimes, you know, in this new world we're in of everything being online, like you said earlier, the bank robberies and stolen money and hacks, all these things are taking place on the internet, right? If someone is required to physically have something in my possession, that just makes me feel so much more comfortable. So I've tied my password manager to that physical YubiKey. So it gives me comfort at night knowing that if all of my passwords are in this treasure trove, a hacker or someone would need to come into my house and actually take this key and plug it in, or use what's called NFC, near field communication, and it will relay that information, the password information, to your device. So just to give a practical viewpoint on this, because I know whenever people start talking about things I don't understand, like dividends and things like that, I always thank Brad, because Brad says, wait, stop, you know, explain this to me like I'm five, right? So the way a YubiKey works is it's just like, you know, you log in with your username and your password, your passphrase, whatever it is, to a device, and then it'll say, hey, two-factor authentication that many of you are probably familiar with, either sending a code to your phone, using an authenticator app. The other option is using this YubiKey, and it'll say insert YubiKey or wave it above your phone or however you want to do it. And then what it'll do is it'll insert a one-time code, think RSA token, if you will, and that'll do the two-factor authentication login into that device.
Yep. Okay, that makes perfect sense. And yeah, I certainly appreciate the kind words about me slowing it down. I definitely want to do that even further still here, because this is really critical. And this is, you know, when you're talking about steps you can take in order to secure your online and your financial life, I think passwords, why we're starting with both passwords and ultimately two-factor authentication, which is what this YubiKey is, this is probably the simplest thing you can do to get 80%+ of the way there. And obviously, we might argue over that percentage. It doesn't ultimately matter. But if you can do, like Tom said at the beginning, 1% better, take action. If you could do anything, it would be, let's get really as close to unbreakable, longer passwords. We won't say unbreakable, but get a password manager that has an amazing master password and get two-factor authentication on everywhere you possibly can. And Tom, this is what I want to dive into. So first, I know you said you don't want to give recommendations, and I really appreciate and respect that. I think if we could just even point people in the direction of, let's say, two or three of the most popular password managers, I think LastPass and 1Password are a couple of them. Tom, I don't want to put you on the spot, but are there any others that are just like amongst the most popular? You don't even have to say your favorites or anything, but amongst the most popular that people could even start with.
Yeah, the LastPass, 1Password, I think KeePass is another one. Those are the ones that I've heard the most about. I don't have personal experience with those, so I can't speak to those personally, but I've heard good things. I mean, everyone can do a quick Google search and you'll see the top ones, but those are the ones I would stick with. And to your point about two-factor authentication, I talked about YubiKeys because that's what I use, because that's what makes me feel the most secure. And I want to touch on this real quick. I ordered two because I wanted a backup YubiKey, because when you're talking about a physical device that could get lost, That's a real possibility, especially if you have a three-year-old like I do that likes to stick things in vents and everything else that he can find. So I think it's important that people know if they're going to go down that road, I highly recommend ordering a two-pack, but that's not the only road. That's just, you know, me as a guy who's really into cybersecurity, who wants to feel the most comfortable, I went down that road. The easier option is just to use two-factor authentication right now. You don't have to order anything. You don't have to buy anything, you know. You can turn on two-factor authentication, and you should, at every opportunity. The least secure is going to be SMS or text messaging, because a lot of hackers will use social engineering, which is just, if you don't know what that is, that's just a fancy way of saying manipulating people through talking to them. Calling up Verizon and saying, hey, I got a new phone, I need you to, you know, do something, and then they just do it because they're really good at talking to people. There's entire careers in social engineering now that people can figure out how to exploit our trusting tendencies. You know, society doesn't work if we don't trust each other. And unfortunately, that can be exploited. Some interesting stories in my time is people will pretend that they are pregnant. A woman will pretend that they are pregnant and walk up to a building. And of course, you're going to hold the door for a woman who's pregnant, right? And let them in. But it might be against your security policy to do so. So it's things like that, little social engineering tricks that people use that they could potentially spoof your telephone number. So SMS, text message, two-factor authentication is better than nothing, certainly. Highly recommend turning that on. But the next step up would be an authenticator app like Microsoft, Google, any of the authenticator apps, Authy, that you can use. that's what I would recommend people if you want to take action today, because you can't, if you don't have a YubiKey in your hand, you can't take action today. But that's what I would recommend. Doing two-factor authentication would solve so many of people's issues.
Yeah, totally agree. I think to me, that is to every single person listening, if you do not have two-factor authentication on your financial websites, you need to do that today. It should take you all of, I mean, depending on how many sites, maybe 5, 10, 15 minutes. We're not talking a huge amount of time here. And it can just be done. And like Tom said, essentially everybody listening, probably 99.999% of you have phones. You can do this. Sure, text messaging is not the ideal two-factor, but it's certainly better than no two-factor. And very, very easily, you could download and install the Google Authenticator app, or Authy is another one, like Tom said, that I'm very familiar with. And almost every financial site that I've seen has one of those two options, or certainly if you include text messaging. It seems like, unfortunately, some of the bigger sites, the Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab's, they don't seem to, at least the last time I checked, use the Authenticator app. So I think there's options with YubiKey and things like that, or text messaging. So this is something you need to take action on today. It's just real, real simple. And Tom, as far as, and I'm glad you touched on like the backup of the YubiKey, is there a thought to having a backup of your authenticator apps as well on a separate device? Because I guess my question is, if you lose your phone, like this is always my nightmare scenario, is I have so many things two-factored on my phone, including my phone login. So like at the company that I use for my mobile phone service. So I guess to hopefully cut down on that potential social engineering, but like this circular reasoning is always like, oh man, well, what the heck happens if I lose my phone, right? That's the nightmare scenario for a lot of people with two-factor, is they went to all this trouble to do this and were doing the right thing, but then they lost their phone. Like, is that something you could game out for us? Like, what do you do if that happens? Are there ways to potentially mitigate this by as silly, like maybe having an older phone that you put those apps on? I know there are ways to update them with the exact sites that you have currently on your existing phone. Like, have you thought through that as like a gamed out scenario?
Certainly. So that's where the SMS also is a weak link in the 2FA, because if you use your phone, sure, you can figure it out with your provider potentially to get that phone number ported to a new phone, and then you can receive those codes again, right? But rather than doing all of that, if you had an authenticator app or a physical YubiKey, but let's just focus on the authenticator app, because I think that's what most people are going to be doing. If you back up those codes, so if you, let's say Google Authenticator, for example, when you log into it, it'll give you the option to sort of export all your codes, if you will, and it'll give you two QR codes. What you could potentially do is save those QR codes, like a screenshot or a picture of them somewhere, either preferably offline or, you know, maybe in a very secure password manager or something like that. But you could have those backed up somewhere else so that, like you said, if you did lose your phone, well, now you just have to download the app again and then import those codes again. That's something you definitely want to do because, like you said, your life, you did all this great work securing your passwords. And then if you end up losing that device, you feel like, oh man, why did I do all that when I was my own worst enemy, right? But I also want to mention, if you lose your device, oftentimes, let's say if you use Gmail or Google a lot, or whatever you're using, a lot of times you can go into settings and see all the current sessions that are logged in to various applications or things like that. As soon as you lose a device, you want to make sure that you're going in and logging out of all of that stuff and changing passwords and things like that, just to be secure. And that's something I do every now and then, is just kind of view the activity on that dashboard of what sessions are being used. You know, I just did it a week ago because I switched jobs recently, and I saw, oh, I still had a session from my previous job that was active. So I got rid of that, because you just don't want to log in and see, oh, there's a session from another country that's active right now. So just an idea as well if you lose a device.
Yeah, I love that. And I guess just kind of one of the final words on two-factor here is your email accounts are critical things to lock down with two-factor. Because if you think about it, what happens when you go to a website and you say, I lost my password? They send you some type of reset through your email, right? So if the weak link is your email account, somebody can very simply reset your password with an email that shows up in your inbox, which they just hacked into because you had a bad password and you had no two-factor. Well, there's your problem, right? So email accounts, to a lesser degree, though, probably very important in this day and age, is social media is really important. I guess kind of the addition to social media would be actually those backup questions that people are always asking on, hey, if you lost your password, you can't remember, where did you go on your honeymoon? Or who was your best friend, their first name or something? Don't give away information just needlessly on those. Like, these don't happen quite as often anymore, but I think I've seen with kind of like my parents' age people, like, oh, there's this cute thread on, like, what was the house you grew up, or what was the street you grew up on, and your dog's or your first pet's name or something, and like you put it together, and like that's possibly, I'm not like necessarily saying, but Tom, that's possibly that social engineering that you're talking about. It's just giving away information needlessly. It just doesn't make sense in this day and age when your entire financial life is tied to these few accounts.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of those things I think we'll see go away, those security type questions, because as you said, our lives are online and you'd be amazed at what I could find out about you if I really wanted to. And especially being able to answer a lot of those questions people pick, right? Oh, what's your son's middle name? Like, oh, like that's some like huge secure, you know, information. It's not. So it's funny that those are even a thing. I think those will be phased out in terms of, you know, like I said, more secure two-factor authentication options and even getting into the future, public-private keys that I believe are the future. But it's funny, but yeah, you're right. I don't recommend giving away all those answers if you use those.
Yeah, and it's probably a minor thing, but I think it's the mindset. And I suspect that's a bunch of the things we might talk about in the rest of the episode here. It's just kind of like a mindset of security, right? So if you get an email and it's from a company that it looks like it's a legit email, and it's a company you deal with, and oh, click here to log in. I never click on those links. Never, ever, ever. Because for the 2 seconds of ease that it provides me, I could have just navigated to the site anyway, that I already know the specific URL, and I go there very safely and just log in like normal and check my message. Or I can click on this link that, even if I've done my little bit of due diligence and it looks like it's coming from the right company, et cetera, you can never be 100% sure. And again, for that 2 seconds of ease, I'm potentially exposing myself to someone trying to hack into a very important account. So I think one of my rules of thumb is just click on as few links as humanly possible in emails, especially from any type of official looking site, because frankly, if that's the only way they have to get in touch with you, there's something wrong with their communication style. So almost invariably, if it's a credit card, if it's a Vanguard or Fidelity or whatever brokerage you use, they have secure messages. They have messages. There are ways to contact you. So clicking on a link in an email is usually a terrible idea. So Tom, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that and kind of that larger issue of the mindset of security.
Yeah. You always talk about like the Pareto principle, right? The 80-20. This is one of those things that we can talk about YubiKeys. We can talk about complex passphrases. We can talk about, you know, what we haven't talked to is like encrypting your hard drive, either using BitLocker if you're using Windows or File Vault if you're on a Mac. Like, these are all fantastic things to do. But in my time, in my career, and what you'll see out there is that the number one weakest link is always the human. The technology will get more sophisticated. The different, you know, ways to defend ourselves will get more sophisticated. But the weak link in any situation is always going to be the human. So it's that mindset of security, like you said, and it's clicking links, phishing links, as you know, we always hear about them. And I guarantee no one is immune to it, even myself. Like, I clicked a phishing link, you know, in my time. You know, even being so security conscious, I get emails from my company now and I go to my boss and I say, is this legit? Even though it all looks legit, I verify before I click anything in an email. And you'd be amazed what verbal verification can do for a company or a person. We have these things called business email compromises, or BECs, that we deal with a lot. or I did deal with a lot in my previous career, which is essentially just phishing targeting businesses and getting into their systems, either by spoofing their emails or actually getting people to click links and hacking into their accounts, and then saying, hey, this email is from CEO Bob, sends an email to the finance unit saying, I know you were going to send $300,000 to account A. There's been a change. I need you to send it to account B. And because of someone clicking a link that got into that account, they were able to send that email from the CEO's account, and it oftentimes will come with an urgency to it, saying, I need this done now. And so you have that worry of urgency and the worry of authority that people fall victim to. But had they just picked up the phone and said, hey, CEO Bob, you know, I just got your request. I just want to make sure that you wanted me to send this $300,000 to this new account. That would cut down on so many problems for businesses. And if it does happen to you personally, that as well. Like, just verbal verification is huge. I wanted to get that point across because in my previous career, we saw so many victims because of phishing, because of things like ransomware and these other things. And we can get into that later, but there's these simple steps, that 80-20 thing that we can all do and that we want to get out to protect people and businesses. But getting back to clicking links, I want to tell a quick story because I often find anecdotes are you know, interesting. I was sitting with a judge and I was swearing out a search warrant and, you know, I got all that business taken care of. And then at the end, he was like, hey, by the way, since you're a cyber nerd, he said, my wife got an email saying we spent $80 on this app in the Apple iOS store, and she doesn't know what it's talking about. You know, I don't know what to do. You know, how do we like get our money back or fix this situation? And I said, okay. I said, step one, if you got an email saying anything, even if there isn't a link, you know, do what you said, Brad. Go to the source. Go to your Apple account. Verify it how you would normally verify anything, whether it's a credit card, a fraudulent, maybe you get a text saying, I think I got one just the other day saying like, oh, I need you to approve this $1,500 Amazon purchase or something like that. A, Amazon's never texting me any of that. Right. But B, I could just log into my Amazon app or website and verify that, oh, nothing of the sort happened. So I told the judge, I said, hey, let's call your wife real quick and have her log into her account. Okay, there's nothing there. There's nothing there of this $80 purchase. And I said, that email, let's do a quick look at that email that you got it from. A lot of times, you know, you'll get an email from somebody and it'll have like their name. You know, it's not actually the email. It just says Brad, right? It's given a name to it. It doesn't actually say Brad at ChooseFI or whatever. So I said, let's actually look at the email address that it came from. And it was like, you know, support@microsoftapple.com. It was literally microsoftapple.com or some combination of that. And I said, Microsoft Apple, those are two different companies. They would never have the same name. So that's another red flag. Other things to look out for are poor grammar, poor usage of English, different fonts, just weird looking formats. But all of those are red flags for me when I'm personally looking at an email, whether or not I want to click a link or not. But I pretty much never click a link in any emails.
Yeah, I love this mindset. It's just that, like you said, the 80-20 principle, and realistically, it's going to get you ahead of 95%+ of people just doing a couple of these smart things. And obviously, you don't want to stop there, but this stuff really makes a difference. And you mentioned urgency in there in terms of, you have to approve this X number of dollar transaction or whatever. I'm curious about like the ease that we might try to like fall prey to sometimes. Are there things we shouldn't do in terms of our financial life? Like, I'm always talking about setting things up on autopilot and linking accounts and having my utility accounts debited from my checking. Are there any security issues there? Are there any security issues like using a credit card or a debit card? Like, how do you think through the bare bones, like day-to-day financial stuff?
So as far as the day-to-days, I am 100% on the Brad train of automating everything, using credit cards for everything. The great thing about credit cards is that they come with that built-in protection. I just recently made a purchase, and after not getting a response on a few emails, I just disputed the charge, right? And you know, if you do get your identity stolen, a lot of times there's protections in using credit cards and things like that that the companies will help you out with. Now, obviously, they're doing all of that because they make money out of, off of most people who use credit cards. But for those of us in the FI community, we generally don't give too much money to those companies. And so we can use those things to our advantage. So I am all for automating your purchases and things like that. It's just, you know, I don't want this to come off as like, never use the internet, never use credit cards, you know, anything like that. We have to use those things. And I use them every day. But it's about just being smart, being cognizant of what you're doing. If I had to like break this down into like some simple steps, like I said, use a password manager, use two-factor authentication, don't click links in an email, and just be cognizant of what you're doing and what information you're putting out there. Oh, one thing I really want to touch on that we haven't yet is update your devices. If it's your phone, if it's your computer, if you have your own router, or if you, I'm assuming most people just use, you know, what Verizon or Comcast or whatever your provider gives you. But any of your devices, your IoT, your Internet of Things devices that you have, a Nest or a Ring doorbell or all of these things that have now, you know, our refrigerators have computers and Wi-Fi now. So all of these things are just something that you want to think about making sure are up to date. Because when Apple or Android or whatever it is pushes you an update and you say, I'll get to it later, what happens is they are saying to the world oftentimes, these are the security flaws that were in our system. This patch updates that security flaw, so it's no longer an issue. And what happens in the world, especially in businesses, I don't want to talk just to individuals, but I know we have a lot of small business owners in the community. You know, a lot of people in businesses think, oh, I don't want to update that because it may cause issues with this, right? But what happens is this big, you know, SolarWinds or whatever breach or hack that's going on at the time, what often happens isn't what's called 0 days. 0 day exploits are basically exploits that no one knows about, if you want to be simple. But that's not often what the problem is. The problem often is these companies, Google, Apple, whoever, say, hey, we became aware of an issue. We're now pushing out an update that will fix this issue. Please do this. And then you will have companies or people not fix that issue. And hackers say, well, we were just told how to hack into your device because Apple said it was a flaw in their system. I'm going to scan the internet for devices that haven't updated their systems. And that's an easy way in for me. So I just really want to harp on updating devices for that reason.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would extend that to web browsers also. I know I'm constantly seeing like on Twitter, Facebook, and people mentioning, oh, there was one of these issues that exploits that the company found out about and they pushed a new update live. Go and make sure you log in. Like Chrome is really easy. You just go to settings and it's like about Chrome and there's a button to refresh and restart. It takes all of 15 seconds. But like you said there, the hackers know about the exploit in that intermediate time. So sure, I can wait until the next time I open the browser and it will, in all likelihood, especially if I have some setting checked, it'll auto update. But I leave my browser open all day sometimes, like most people do, Tom, right? And like that might not update until the next day. So if that's giving the bad guys, if you will, an extra day to potentially attack, when I see that, I just very quickly, even if it means, oh, I've got to reopen some tabs and it's slightly annoying. Like I think that would be another kind of takeaway is like, yeah, sometimes this is a little bit annoying. It's easier to not have two-factor authentication. It's easier to not have to grab your YubiKey and plug it in or do the NFC. But that extra couple of seconds of work, and that's what we're talking about here, a couple of seconds of work is going to put you ahead of 95 to 99% of people. You got to do it. Sometimes life is a little uncomfortable and you have to do things you don't want to do. So I think that would be my one kind of like, you know, big brother admonishment is like, all right, this is annoying sometimes. I get it. It's annoying to all of us, but you do it because it's the smart thing to do.
Yeah. And I don't want to scare people into saying like, hey, there's a hacker in your bushes. And as soon as you don't update your browser, you know, in the next hour, he's going to get in there, right? That's not what I'm trying to get at. What I'm saying is, you know, I've seen businesses not update for years. And so, again, don't go crazy with these things, but just do the smart thing. When you're done your session with the browser, restart your computer and update it. When you go to sleep at night, make sure you click install now that your phone is plugged in. You know, you don't have to be crazy about doing it right now, but do it because they've announced to the world, hey, this is how you could exploit this person's account. So because they've announced it to the world, now you need to do something to fix it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I'm curious about how you navigate the internet and how we should think about it. Because again, this is a mindset. Obviously, we're not trying to scare people here by any means. It's 2022 when we're recording this. We live our lives online. Nobody's saying don't go online or be a hermit or worry about people attacking you every minute. That's not the issue here. Most of us can go through a decade or two without having any issue at all. So that's not the game we're playing here. It's just, we're just trying to be smart. So Tom, I suspect that I'm a little bit crazy. I hate to use that word, but like a little bit eccentric, let's say, when it comes to navigating the internet. I know at this point, my family already knows this and it's kind of like the joke, but I try to go to as few unfamiliar websites as I possibly can. I try to stay away from like anything that like appears sketchy, and that's kind of like a, you know it when you see it. I know that doesn't really help all that much. But in terms of like navigating the web, seeing something on Google and not automatically assuming, hey, just because it's in Google, and I know I'm kind of saying that jokingly, like that it's got to be safe, or not clicking on files or downloading programs. Like, again, with this 80-20 analysis in mind, like, are there things that you can do while clearly understanding we're living our lives online and we're not being hermits here?
Yeah, I want to say, I know I've long suspected that you are crazy as well. So, you know, that, no, I would say, honestly, don't be scared. Just be smart. And it's a simple thing where, you know, you'll see the little lock symbol in your browser for HTTPS, which is a secure session. If you're doing financial stuff, what I recommend is, you know, making sure you see that, because most websites are using that now. And what I do personally is I sort of segment my financial life. I have a separate email account for my finances and my important stuff that I don't enter into randomwebsite.com that needs an email account. You know, I'll either use a throwaway email, or I have a, you know, an entirely separate spam email account that is just for those random websites, but I will not give out my most crucial email address that actually is connected to all my financial stuff. So that, you know, like you said, browsing, just being smart, it's not something I would say like, oh, only stick to these websites or anything like that. It's just about being smart with clicking on things. One thing I will want to get across when it comes to phishing emails or websites, some people may not realize that simply by clicking a link, what's called malware or malicious software can be installed onto your system. And at that point, your whole system can be taken over. So that's why we harp on not clicking links. That's why visiting websites and clicking links there, that's why we talk about those things, is because what can happen is like a keylogger could be installed on your system. Again, I like to tell stories. I had a stepbrother who I said, hey, don't play games on my computer while I'm gone, for whatever big brother jerk reason I was giving at the time. I don't remember, but I said, hey, don't use my computer right, you know, when I go. I also installed a keylogger because I knew he would. And so I get back.
Truly for anyone big brother who's played, here, like, Tom. Truly big brother.
Exactly, right? For anyone who's played a first-person shooter or a computer game, you'll know that WASD is how you kind of move forward, back, left, and right a lot. So when I get back and I see my keylogger is www-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a-a- top of just being cognizant of what you're doing is because these pieces of software, this malware, can be installed on your systems very easily if you click a link in an email, if you visit a site and say download an executable. You know, all these ways are ways that hackers are looking to get into your system. So I don't have a good, you know, don't do this and do this online. It's just be aware. That's the main thing.
Yeah, I love your quote a minute ago. Don't be scared, just be smart.
Yeah.
I don't think we could encapsulate it better than that if we tried. We could probably just wrap up shop here at this point just with that. That's amazing. So you talked about malware and things like that. Do antivirus softwares work at all? Again, I know you're loath to give recommendations, but like, do you consider antivirus software as being useful, necessary? If so, are there a couple of companies that you may think are better than others?
If you want to go like the full, you know, we talk about 80-20. If you want to go the full 100, sure, you can start using Malwarebytes and all these other different softwares to really scan your systems and different AV programs. But I'll be honest, in recent years, you know, that it used to be a thing back in the day that you'd like get your computer and then you'd buy Norton. You'd get your computer and you'd buy Kaspersky, you know, or whatever. But my dad, he'll get a computer and he'll be like, all right, you know, it came with a trial of Norton for 30 days. What do I do now? Honestly, the Windows Defender, the built-in AV is so good at this point that that's going to get you the 80-20 that you need. I don't personally even use an AV or anything extra. Now, that also comes with my sort of bias or background in that, you know, some of those I know, I'm not going to name names, but some of those are controlled by other countries or originated from other countries that may have ulterior motives. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's important. But the really crucial piece of information in there is you said like the native Windows antivirus program is actually surprisingly good. And I would not have known that. So I actually just got a new computer fairly recently. And like you said, I think McAfee is the one that was pre-installed on mine. And I keep getting these ridiculous notifications that it's set to expire in 14 and a half days or whatever, you know, whatever ridiculous thing it is. So I guess someone gets a new computer. Is that Windows antivirus that's native to the computer, is it turned on, if you will? Like, is it operating? Or if there's a conflict with a Norton or a McAfee or whatever that they may have put a trial on, when that trial expires, do you have to do anything to get the Windows antivirus set up and running? Or is it just happening in the background already?
I believe it should automatically be turned on. If I'm wrong, though, it's as simple as going into your search bar on a Windows machine and you know, typing security and looking for your security settings, you know, or Googling Windows security settings or Windows Defender. But these are things that are oftentimes set up when you're first logging in, and you can say, oh yeah, I want it to automatically update when there are updates. You know, I want to turn these things on, but it never hurts to look, right? So, you know, if you want to purchase Norton or McAfee or whatever it is on top of that, by all means, you know, if that's what you want to do, fine. But for me personally, it's less about, you know, having like 14 different AV programs running and more about making sure they're up to date. And they should have a feature on there. Again, we're all about automating to automatically update those things. But if you go in there, you should just be able to say, oh yeah, all those things are ticked off and are currently running and currently set to auto update. That's what I personally feel comfortable with. That's what most people, all they need.
That's wonderful. And I literally did that while you were talking there. We're clearly talking about PCs here. So obviously people with Apples and, you know, Macs have to figure it out specifically, though I suspect it's almost identical. I literally just went to the search bar, typed in security. It took me to the security area of the control panel. And exactly as you said, they're just these little on-off toggle switches. And I'm just kind of eyeballing them just to make sure everything's turned on. So mine's the perfect case study because I have this brand new computer. So yeah, that's something that will take you all of 30 seconds to do. But if you're listening to this and you're by your computer, no reason not to do it. It's super easy.
Yeah. And that's, like you said, we always talk about what takeaways, what action steps can you take when you're done listening to this episode to actually improve your life. Just do that real quick. Or if you're a Mac, I mean, Macs are very, very secure. So it's probably going to be a similar setting, like you said, but they have really good encryption, especially with their new M1 chips. But it's little things like that that people can do right now and just say, yep, if you have a Windows machine, Windows security settings look good.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, that's great. So I think we've covered the vast majority of kind of like the basics, that 80-20, that's probably more like 95-5 here, but I'd love to give you the floor. Is there something we're missing, or are there any other, clearly you can go down with your experience and maybe we could do like a Ask Me Anything, like a separate episode or something, or you could record a couple of voicemails where you're talking about like very in-depth advanced things. I think that's probably beyond the scope of this, unless there are a couple more things that you wanted to chat about. But are there other things that like we could do that are low-hanging fruit that like we may never have done before, like with our routers or just going on Wi-Fi when you're placed? Like, are there other kind of high-level stuff that you think is really valuable that we may have missed, that most people miss amongst just the, hey, I've got my passwords and two-factor set?
Yeah, certainly. I'll touch on a few, like you said, high-level things. I'm happy to, if you feel it valuable, just make a post in the group, in the Facebook group, if we want to discuss further later with people in sort of an AMA style or however you want to do that.
Yeah, but that would be amazing. That would be really amazing.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll do that in conjunction when this episode goes live. So for anybody listening to this who's in our private Facebook group, you can navigate there. You'll find this thread pretty easily. And if not, just go to chooseabye.com/Facebook and you can get access there.
Sure. Sounds good. Just a few things I'll touch on real quick so people don't get too bored with into the weeds things. But like you said, mentioned, you know, public Wi-Fi, you know, it's something that I try to avoid whenever possible. If you have a cell phone with a hotspot plan and you're out and about and need to get especially some financial login to your bank account, your credit cards, whatever it is, any of those things that would be very important information that a hacker would like to have, I will not be surfing those websites on public Wi-Fi. There's a hacker conference every year in Vegas, and basically if you go there and you connect to the public Wi-Fi, you're going to get owned in about 3 seconds. So again, not trying to scare anyone, but like, it's just something to be cognizant of, just to be aware of that. If you have that option to hotspot rather than public Wi-Fi, that's what I would do. You know, backups. We didn't really talk about this too much, but you know, if you want to have an external hard drive with your backups or in the cloud, that's great. But for, and this kind of speaks to my previous experience as well, dealing with companies or cities or governments that have been ransomwared, a lot of times they'll have backups, but those backups were connected to the system and automatically running every night. So when it's connected to the system that got ransomwared, well, guess what else got ransomwared? And I'm sorry for anyone who doesn't know what ransomware is. It's just basically bad software that goes into your system and encrypts things so that you can't use them until you get the key to decrypt them.
So Tom, that's like files and such, right?
Correct. It's basically, you know, all the files on your machine will oftentimes get encrypted and they'll be unusable, and you'll need to either contact the hacker that encrypted all your files and they'll say, you pay us, you know, 2 Bitcoin and we'll give you your key. Now, whether or not they actually give you the key when you pay them, you're trusting them on that part. So it's not something I always recommend. The better solution is to have backups of your data that are offline that can't be touched if your system were to get ransomwared. And then as far as other things just to be aware of, there's a term, I hate the term, but it's called pig butchering, but it's basically like romance scamming people. You know, the technology increases and you have cryptocurrency now and you have all these things that advance, but it's the same old scams. It's people's vulnerabilities and weaknesses being preyed upon, whether it's loneliness or what have you. People are being constantly messaged and say from a fake account of a attractive female or attractive male, whatever it may be, they start a relationship. I went out and talked to a victim, and she had a relationship with a person for several years. Now, never actually met the person in real life, but this person had built up this trust with the victim. And because of that, they were getting this victim to do all kinds of like money laundering for the hacker. And it's just something I want to make people aware of, that your vulnerabilities can be preyed upon. If you are talking to someone online and you think that you're in a relationship with this person or they're a very trustworthy person and you haven't actually met them or seen them, and they start saying, hey, I have a good investment opportunity for you, or, you know, you should put some money over here, or any of the things like that. We are seeing an explosion in those types of scams, especially with cryptocurrency. People are thinking like, oh, it's like a Bernie Madoff situation where, you know, people are guaranteeing 15-20% high returns. And, you know, people fall victim to that because they either need the money or they just think they trust that person. Just something I want to make people aware of. And I hope I didn't ramble on too much.
No, that's really, really important. And yeah, like you said, the social engineering is one of the biggest ways that people are getting hacked. So this is not to say don't make friendships online, right? I mean, that's obviously not what you're saying here, Tom. But when you get into a scenario where you start trusting someone you've never met before who might not be the person they say they are, right? You shouldn't be sending them $10,000. I mean, these things that sound obvious at the time, but like some of these things can last for months or years. Like I'm even thinking, it was back in the news again about that football player, Manti Te'o, I think his name was, who, I mean, this is a very long, long involved story, but like he had a fake girlfriend that he thought was real. It was this crazy story like 10 plus years ago. So, I mean, this can essentially happen to anybody. So again, we are not trying to scare anybody by any means. It's just, again, don't be scared. Just be smart. Just think about Tom's words. Don't be scared. Just be smart. And I loved your thought there about offline storage of your files. If you have really, really important things, just go out and buy a $10 USB drive. Right at this point, like this is what I do. I have a lot of my files on some of the cloud storage sites. So I theoretically should be able to access them wherever, but it's so easy. Like I put in my Todoist as every 3 months or thereabouts, just literally download all the files onto a USB drive. I have I'm a little bit excessive with some of this stuff. Like I have a safe deposit box at my bank and I just store it in there. I store, like if I had that second YubiKey that you had, I would throw it in my safe deposit box. And it just things like that, like for a password manager, sometimes you would have another method, a printed out grid or something like that. Like, okay, it's great to have one 5 feet from your computer. You need that usually to log in, but have a second copy of this somewhere secure, I guess would be my advice, because heaven forbid there's some kind of a fire or something or whatever it is, like you lose all your options. You thought you were doing a great job having multiple of these things printed out, but you lose them or they get stolen or there's water damage. It could be anything, right? It's a house. Who knows what happens? So just, I think for me, that was a peace of mind. I understand that's not something everybody's going to run out and do tomorrow, nor are we necessarily advocating it. But like, okay, that was like the next step for me that was fairly inexpensive. Just like Tom, the YubiKey, right? Like I think you told me at one point there was a 2-pack of YubiKeys for $60 or $70, $100, whatever it is. It's not that expensive. Is it free? Is it as simple as downloading an authenticator app for free that you can do today? No. So don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We're not saying you have to do a YubiKey. You have to get a safe deposit box. Tom, you might not even recommend the safe deposit box for all I know. It's irrelevant, but clearly get started today. Start doing these things. And then you can move on to maybe these things that you deem necessary or important. I wouldn't even necessarily call them more advanced because, again, I don't know if that's the smartest thing to do, but it helps me sleep at night. So, Tom, that's kind of how I think about this whole mindset of the 80-20 and the don't be scared, just be smart.
Absolutely. And what I don't want is people thinking like, oh, they told me to do 42 things. I'm not going to do a single one, you know? So definitely just take what you can out of this episode. The one thing that you brought up about like, what if there's a fire? It made me think like I've personally been recently writing down instructions for my wife because I handle a lot of the financial side of things. And that may be a similar to somebody in the audience of like, you know, you as the wife or you as the husband or whatever it may be, even if you don't, you know, if you just have someone like a friend or a parent that you want to write this for. You talked about the emergency binder in previous episodes, but I want to go through and we're recommending this 2-factor authentication or we're recommending a YubiKey or things like that. What you want to do is write down, you know, how to actually use these things if you were to pass away or something happened to you. But also, where are they? How do you actually use a YubiKey? Just because you figure it out doesn't mean someone else is going to figure it out. So what I have done is I've written down instructions on how to get to everything and how to use it. And then also, I have friends who are also cyber nerds. And I said, hey, call Matt, call Tim, call whatever, and they will help you through this if need be. But that's another idea that I personally use, of like write down instructions and also give them somebody to call.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. And yeah, that emergency binder, legacy binder is really, really important. We're going to link to our review of that in the show notes for this episode. So on whatever app you're listening to this on, you can usually find show notes just by like clicking a button in actually your podcast app, or you can just go to choosefi.com/397. And that'll have links to everything we talked about today and our review of the legacy binder that Chelsea from emergencybinders.com put together. That's amazing. There's also a 20% off coupon that she gave to Choose of I listeners within that review. So definitely check that out, because it's just another kind of common sense thing that we can do. Just like you said, Tom, like same with my life, is I'm the one, for whatever reason, even my wife's a CPA, so she's obviously more than capable, but just the way we delineated it, what we do in our house is I do most of the finances. So if I got hit by the proverbial bus, I don't know that she would necessarily know, even like, again, all this security, the two-factor stuff, like where we have every single dollar. I mean, she knows the vast majority of them, but like every single dollar. So that's why having this as a plan is just, it's really, really important.
Absolutely. And the only last thing I'll say is, you know, if you've made it this far into a cybersecurity discussion, I appreciate you listening. I think this is very important for everyone. Maybe now you're personally more educated, but something I've seen in my career in law enforcement is that the elderly are often targeted because they are less sophisticated with technology. So if you take things away from this episode, fantastic. But I would also look to share that with your friends and especially older relatives, because we see all the time that older people are targeted, the social engineering, whether they say, you know, hey, this is Microsoft tech support, we found a virus on your computer. A lady said, oh, really? Okay, what do you need? And they say, we're going to install this remote program, TeamViewer, or some way to remote into your computer through remote desktop protocol, whatever it's going to be. We're going to remote into your machine and help you fix the problem. What they do is they remote in, they install whatever they need to install. And this one lady I'm thinking of in particular lost all of their life savings. They're at a point, you know, we talk about FI, right? We talk about financial independence. You know, they've finally retired. They've reached financial independence. And then they get preyed upon and lose all of their money through some sort of scam. And it's just something I want people to be aware of so that they can educate their parents, grandparents, or other family members to say, hey, there's these scams out there. Don't listen to this, you know, IRS scam that they're going to call you, or tech support when they call you. Basically, has Microsoft or Amazon, has any ever called you about anything? Nope. You know, so we laugh at it, right? But it's something that people fall for every day, or else they wouldn't be doing it. So just something, again, I hate to ramble on. I always think of something extra that I've always thought about in my career that I wish people knew.
No, that is really, really helpful. And Tom, like you said, you will have a post in the Facebook group right after this episode goes live where people can ask questions and we can provide some more. You can provide, obviously, some more in-depth information on anything. Almost undoubtedly, when we get done with an episode like this, we're both going to be kicking ourselves for missing something. But that's the beautiful thing about kind of real time with a post like that, is we can talk about it, we can update things, we can answer questions. So really appreciate you coming on and certainly offering that up. And as you know, from being a longtime listener, we used to do a segment called The Hot Seat, which is back by overwhelming popular demand. I asked in my fi-weekly email, which anybody, if you're not on that, I send that out every single Tuesday. You can get on at chooseofi.com/subscribe. That's really the best way to stay up to date with the community and just little things that I pick up every week that I think are valuable and can really provide you some inspiration and I guess motivation to take action. So I asked for, what do you want to see come back? And maybe something we used to do. And it was crazy how many people said the hot seat. So long story short, even campy music and all, Tom, are you ready for the hot seat?
I guess so. And it's been so long, I don't even know. I think I am, though.
In a world drowning in debt and rampant consumption, trapped by the chains of lifestyle inflation, these questions highlight the secrets of those who have broken free. Welcome to the Choose FI Hot Seat.
All right, Tom. So I have added a couple questions and we'll pick and choose here. So I guess let's start with, what is your favorite blog, podcast, or book? Or if you have more than one you want to mention.
So I don't read too many blogs. The one that stood out to me over the years was Wait But Why. And I know that's a favorite of yours as well, I believe. because you mentioned the tail end article several times on episodes. For me, there was an article or a blog post that he made called The Fermi Paradox that I just love all things space and exploration and all of that. And it's just thinking about, you know, what's out there. And he just does an excellent job. So Wait But Why, I would say, for blog. For podcast, I've listened to nearly every episode of Choose FI. So that goes without saying that it's one of my favorites. But as far as, you know, if we want to get out of the financial realm of things, I'm big into investigative journalism. So a lot of people know about the podcast Serial that kind of like took everyone by storm. Another one that I love is called In the Dark. Season one is fantastic, but season two is even better. So I highly recommend In the Dark. Every time someone asks me about podcasts, I recommend it. And then book, again, if we're talking about impact on my life, Simple Path to Wealth, that's an easy one to choose. The Alchemist, I loved the short fable of The Alchemist because that really, you know, helped me remember to focus on following my dreams. I know you only asked for one, and I apologize for rambling here, but Die with Zero was a book that took me from being all about compound interest and saving every nickel to, wait a second, you know, that and the tail end article from on Wait But Why both made me shift my mindset to, wait a second, I have a limited number of years left with my kids in my house. I want to make these the best years of my life. I don't want to make the best years of my life my late 60s. So those are the ones that stood out to me. For pure entertainment value, I've read the book Ready Player One many, many times. It's actually narrated very well as well. I listen to the audiobook. So that would probably be a favorite just fiction book.
Nice. Wow. That's awesome. Really appreciate all the info. And it's funny, one of our community members has a blog called runnersfi.com. And his name is David. He put together a list of 174 must-read books of FI. And again, this will be in the show notes. And he incredibly navigated through every single episode we've ever had and like the number of times a book was mentioned. And of course, the first book out of your mouth was Simple Path to Wealth. And that is now the 29th time it's been mentioned here on the podcast. So it's incredible. So very, very cool. You know, we love J.L. Collins, obviously, here at Choose FI. So, all right, Tom, question number two, an inflection point in your life that was especially memorable or meaningful?
I think absolutely the first one that comes to mind is just being sat next to a guy who actually knew what this thing FIRE was and knew what Simple Path to Wealth was to harken back to that. And he said, hey, you should check out this FIRE movement. Hey, you should check out this book by J.L. Collins. I didn't know what an IRA was before that. And I'm in my mid-30s at that time. You know, my dad said, oh, save, you know, X percent of your paycheck. And that's what I knew and definitely set me up well. But I didn't know what I know now. So the inflection point of meeting my friend and having him put me on this path to FI and then discovering Choose FI and then me like running with it and like listening to every single episode of Choose FI and having not only J.L. Collins to sort of break the foundation of my knowledge, but then having what felt like an ongoing communication, even though it was one-sided between Brad, Jonathan, the guests, and myself, felt like I was sharing this journey. So just discovering FI would be a huge inflection point for my family. And then that led to another inflection point that happened a month ago when I actually left my federal law enforcement career and went to the private sector. And I would have never, ever done it without that first inflection point because I would have never had the confidence or knowledge to set myself up financially to make a career change that has now allowed me to work from home and spend so much more valuable time with my family.
Yeah, that's amazing. You think about the ripple effects of these little moments in our lives, right? Like you're saying, sitting next to this friend who told you about FI and told you about the Simple Path to Wealth and where that's led you. It's really, really wild when you think about that.
Yes. Thank you, Dave, by the way. I'd be remiss not to say his name.
Nice. Yeah, shout out to Dave. That's awesome. All right, Tom, question number three, your favorite life hack?
I'd have to say probably audiobooks and just reading in general. Like I still am not a big reader when I actually sit down. Anytime I read, I'm a slow reader. I fall asleep. I wasn't a huge reader growing up, but then I discovered audiobooks and I realized I can multitask. I get a kick out of doing the dishes or mowing the lawn now because it means reading time. And, you know, being able to read, just like I said, I discovered audiobooks around the same time I discovered Phi. And I can't tell you how many books I've read in that time when I had never read a single book since school prior to that. So for me, reading, it's a weird life hack to say, but reading, using Libby, the Libby app on my phone to access all the books in the library in my state, all the audiobooks, and then also learning about like speeding up podcasts and books, like I not knowing that was a thing, I realized I can handle sometimes 2x speed of ingesting information. And you know, now I'm churning through even more books. So that would probably be number one. Two little life hacks that are actually life hacks that I want to mention that I often use is if you have a tough decision to make, the trick of flipping a coin in the air, and then while it's in the air, you tend to figure out which one you were rooting for. So I love that little trick. If I'm really stuck between, you know, pizza or tacos, right? It's not, you know, I don't use it generally for the big decisions, but it's one of those things that I found works and is funny. And then if you'll allow me to say one more, is every summer, and now I'm going to get a little serious again, every summer you hear about these horrible stories of kids being left in cars, you know, in the back seat, in a car seat, and it's a hot day, and some parent forgets about the kid, and you think to yourself initially, you know, what a horrible parent, I would never do that. Well, you know, you've seen doctors, you've seen a range of people do this. And so I thought to myself, what is actually happening here? I felt a need as a parent to investigate what was happening here. And I learned it's not whether you're a good or bad parent. It's this mode that our brain gets in, this auto mode, this autopilot that we get in. And if we say, Brad, every morning you get up and you go to CrossFit at 8 a.m., well, you're just going to go into auto mode and do that in your mornings. Well, what if one morning something changed? Your wife couldn't take your daughter to swim practice and you had to do it that morning? Or, you know, this generally occurs with younger kids, right? Let's say you had to take the kid to daycare and you weren't the normal one to take him. Well, what happens in these situations is that parent isn't in that routine of taking that kid to daycare. So they get in auto mode. They go to work, they get out, they forget. So it's not a good or bad parent thing. And I know you're probably going to cut this from the podcast. So I apologize for rambling. But it's something that I researched and I wanted people to know that if you do something like go out of your routine and take your kid somewhere, the thing that it sounds silly, but if you take a shoe off and put it in the back seat with your kid, you will never get out of that car and not notice that one of your shoes is missing. So you will never forget your kid in the back seat. And people are going to say, I would never forget my kid in the back seat. If that were true, then this wouldn't be happening every summer. We wouldn't hear these stories every summer because there are good parents that do this. It's not a good or bad parent thing. So, you know, it's just something I personally do. If I'm not in the routine of doing something, if not in the routine of taking my kid to school or practice or whatever, just take a shoe off or your phone or something that you will immediately realize when you get out, and you'll never forget that kid in the car seat. It's something personally that affected me greatly when I hear these stories, because you just think that kid was in that car, in that hot car for 100 degrees for 8 hours, and it just crushes me. So, you know, I apologize for going off on a tangent there.
No, that's really important. It's something that, yeah, we wouldn't really consider. And like you're saying, we're on these kind of autopilot scripts a lot of times. And yeah, anytime there's this disruption, I suspect, obviously, this is the most consequential version of this, clearly. But I suspect that advice could be useful in other instances. Whether it's a shoe or not is largely irrelevant. But I guess that would make it pretty clear, right? You're not going to go walking around with one shoe. So yeah, that's I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. That really, really is important. All right. Well, we got question number four here. The advice you would give your younger self.
Advice I would give my younger self is just that I would tell myself that audiobooks are a thing, that you don't have to actually read, because the act of reading just always turned me off. And it turns out that there's a lot of great information in books.
Yeah. And funny that, right?
Yeah, little did I know. But I can't tell you the transformation in the past 5 years of my life from reading, whether it's just talking about pure enjoyment. I just finished a great book called The Extraordinary Life of Sam Hell. Like, it's just a fiction book, and it was really enjoyable. But, you know, then you get into the world of Phi, and, I actually taught myself a lot of stuff about cryptocurrency in the past year and a half and read a bunch of books through audiobooks to teach myself those things and then used YouTube courses to learn those things. And by learning those concepts, I was able to pivot my entire career into something that is now a work from home, much better fit for my family type career. And it wouldn't have been possible without audiobooks. So ultimately, I would say start reading Younger Tom because there is so much information out there. I'd also say buy Bitcoin, you know, as soon as possible. And don't date that one girl in college that you dated who ended up turning out to be married. So those are the three things.
Good ones all. And yeah, just to talk about reading for a second. Well, first, you actually sent me an amazing book a couple years ago that I still have and we'll get back to you at some point called Ducey, D-U-C-Y. And it's Exploits, Advice, and Ideas of the Renowned Strategist. So this was by a poker player. This is an amazing, amazing book. So don't sell yourself short that you're not a reader here. I know definitively you are a reader since you did physically send me a book a couple years ago. So that will be coming back to you at some point, I promise.
Yeah, we didn't even get into my whole poker days of all of that. But
yeah. Well, listen, we're going to have you back on because something that I've always wanted to talk about that I think is really important just for mindset is like the poker mindset, the concept of expected value, positive and negative EV, right? Like this is all, it's critical. And I was the most amateur of amateur players. I mean, I can play poker, but no self-aggrandizing here. I'm not a poker player. But the many, many hours I spent playing poker, I think has been really invaluable to my life and decision-making and how I look at the probabilistic nature of life and decision-making. So I know we've had Annie Duke on in the past, and I think this is something, if you're up for it, we'll try to do another episode at some point in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm not going to get into it now, but the world of poker and learning poker and the decade I spent studying it changed my life forever. And it's something I would recommend to everyone.
Yeah, totally agree. Totally agree. So, all right, I've got two last questions here, but actually knowing what I know about you, I think it's going to be the same answer. So I'm going to combine them. So the normal question is, what purchase have you made in the last 12 months that has added the most value to your life? And I've added a question, what was your favorite splurge? Could be in the last 6 months, a year, who knows? Just the thing that you've spent money on. I think so many people in the FI community talk about cutting costs and such. And I really want to focus on sometimes spending money is just so critical. And I know you mentioned the book Die with Zero. So let's combine them because I suspect very strongly here it's going to be the same answer.
Yeah, absolutely. You are correct. And that Die with Zero, I'm thankful for that mindset shift of focusing on these best years of my life. You know, I'm only going to get less healthy and my back's going to get worse, you know, and my kids are going to move out. So for me, I really, really focus on making those memories. And sometimes, even with travel rewards and other, you know, great five principles, sometimes you have to spend money to make those memories. And a recent one, it was a lot more expensive than I expected, but so worth it was my family. We just went to a place called the Woodlock Resort in the Poconos in Pennsylvania. And I actually told you, Brad, I said, hey, I'm going to be going up there. And I believe you said you've been there.
I have been there. I was there as a kid. My parents took us up there, I think, 2 summers. And yeah, you know, I don't know what it's like now, but it was this like really amazing, just like family environment. There were tons of like different games and organized things. And I think it was like all inclusive. There were all these meals that you did at that point, at least, you know, it's a pretty expensive place, as you said, but it was all inclusive. It was just so much fun to order whatever the heck you wanted at dinner.
Yeah, absolutely. And the best description. So I was up till 1 a.m. on TripAdvisor reading reviews before I booked it. And it was so accurate. The best description I read was it's a cruise on land. So, you know, you've got planned events, yeah. You know, you sit at the same table every meal, but there's just so much to do at this resort. And I'm not trying to have a commercial for the resort, but it's one of those things where my kids got home and they said that was the best vacation ever of our entire lives, of anything we've ever done. We want to go back to Woodlock. And we made so many memories there where they win these medals as kids or as families because you do these Family Olympics or Double Dare. And then they have these shows every night that are fantastic. They have horse racing, which I personally, I'm a big animal rescue guy. I'm not huge into horse racing for moral reasons. And I was like, I don't really want to go to the horse. Well, it turns out it's fake horses, fake wooden horses. And they just kind of, it's like bingo, if you will. You know, they're rolling dice and, you know, horses are trotting along and you can bet a dollar, right? And to see my 3-year-old and my 8-year-old's faces when they won because their horse won, it's just those memories are what we built. And so looking back, spending, you know, an expensive amount on that trip was well worth it. And I don't regret it at all.
That's awesome. Love it. That is the perfect splurge, right? An experience with family. So good for you. All right, Tom. So thank you so very much for coming on the show. This was great. I think this is going to be really, really helpful for the audience. And yeah, nice having the hot seat back here. One of the first times. So that was very cool. And like you said, when this goes live, we'll have a post in the Facebook group where you'll be answering questions on any other kind of cybersecurity, financial security type stuff that people might have. And yeah, we'll do our best to answer everything, certainly. So greatly appreciate that. I think that's probably the easiest way for people to get in touch with you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you have poker questions, you know, feel free to field those as well. So
nice. And yeah, we will definitely do a round 2 at some point in the future. So yeah, Tom, thank you again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Brad.
All right. And to the audience, thank you for being here. This is really, really important. As Tom said, like, this is a mindset and it's not about being scared. It's just about being smart. So as always with Chooseify, take action, get started, update your passwords, get a password manager, and set up two-factor authentication as quickly as you possibly can. It really does not take that long to do, and it will get you so far ahead. So again, take action, and you can always check the show notes at chooseify.com/397.